Hello and welcome to From the Rookery End, a podcast all about a life following Watford Football Club. And hey, what a fantastic thing that we can say after Watford's recent run of three games without a single point, we could talk about a point! Which sounds like a ridiculous thing to get excited about. But hey, we'll talk through the game as we always like to do. And of course, we'll have a bit of a chat also this evening about the rumours and everything that's going on with the exit of Ben Manga. But we'll get to that after the game. Joining me this evening is Adam Drury.
Hi, John. How are you?
Very nice, thank you. And Jordy.
Hello.
And well, you made the trip up to Cardiff. Along, I'll go with. Adam, how was Cardiff on the weekend?
Firstly, as you said, delighted to be present for a historic occasion as we don't lose away from home. Yes, it was a lively day in Cardiff. There was rugby on at the same time. Wales kicked off at 2 o'clock, I think. So we just left the city centre as things were getting going and came back and things were pretty rowdy. I've never been on the train before, so nice to experience that city centre.
Well, I remember when we went on our very first From the Rookery End away trip way, way, way back in the day. We actually went to Watford away at Cardiff, Malky Mackay season, and we ended up going to Barry Island beforehand. We got the train from Barry Island. Stupid thing was, we're in January, and Barry Island's pretty much empty in January, so we didn't quite get the fullness of Barry Island. But let's talk about the game and see how we go in terms of, was there much more to like, a little bit more to like? Are we on the right path? Yeah, you might have said Watford in a bit of a hole after no points in three games. But, you know, sometimes you have to sort of struggle out of a hole bit by bit, you know, step by step. For you, Jordy, compared to the Sunderland game, which was just, well, what did you think of the Sunderland game, I suppose, first?
Well, I mean, there's not a lot of positives, really. I was just thinking, it wasn't long ago that we were in the Premier League watching Sunderland on Netflix and kind of imploding in one of those kind of first fly-on-the-wall documentaries, and they've seemed to have got their act in order while we've kind of free-falled.
Do you really think we free-falled? Because this is, I had this thing, like we talked last week about reactions and seeing people, you know, looking at that position, Jordy, that we're in at the moment, and you can look at the number that's next to Watford and it says 20, and you can look at that and make judgments. You can look at the number points where Watford are, the points above. Yeah, when you say free fall, you think that absolutely we're at the pit. Is it just part of the peaks and troughs of being a football fan at the moment?
Well, I mean, if you look at it, it depends on the cycles you look at. If you look at it over a 5-year cycle, we're doing awfully compared to where we were looking to be back then. And then if you look at it over the course of the Watford's history, we're doing okay. This is just a period where we've been, you know, the last 40 years, or whatever, we've been up for a bit, down for a bit.
So how did you feel at the end of that draw on the weekend? Any chipperer?
I guess the shining light on for me was Cardiff, because I think we've seen ourselves, you know, not stand up against teams and get beaten by teams who are more clinical than us, or simply don't commit as many mistakes as us. And Cardiff looked just as desperate, frankly, as we did. And if anything, I think we probably deserved, or were more likely to win the game than them, albeit that game may have had to last 300 minutes for another goal to go in. So I think the most recent games have kind of been a bit of a worry, because we've been outplayed. When we've been beaten, we've deservedly beaten. Whereas with Cardiff, I felt like, okay, there's at least one other team that's not going to be looking, you know, not going to be doing well. It's going to be struggling in some form. So I guess that the optimism was simply that, because had Cardiff beat Sunderland, if that makes sense, they would have beaten us, because they would have taken advantage of the opportunities they had. Cardiff had a few opportunities that they didn't take. You know, one particular where the guy went through, then almost paid homage to Bio's shot against Sunderland just by shooting it over the bar. But, you know, a better finisher would have put that away. And had Cardiff been Middlesbrough, they may not have exploited us. You know, those awful opportunities that we gave Middlesbrough, that they did score early on. So I think really we've been taken to task in our recent games by teams who are not as kind to our mistakes. And Cardiff was the first time we met a team that perhaps was going to be a bit more forgiving and give us a chance to do something. But that's the only kind of positive I could really see out of it, that they weren't as bad as everyone else.
Okay, let's talk about the different positions. You know, there was changes, Adam. You can sort of see from the team, and you know, who went off for who and who was just moved around. We know we started with a back four of Sierra in there alongside Hood and Ngakia and Lewis starting yet again. Do you think that was more of a tactical thing that freed up the midfield, or did you see Adam like Porteous maybe not being at his best?
Yeah, I think the latter more so. I think Ishmael's first choice team would still be Porteous and Hoot at centre back and Sierra just in front in midfield. I have sympathy with Porteous because I think the setup and the way he's been asked to play so far this season has made life very difficult for him. We know that those centre backs play very wide in the build up, they're very open, they're asked to take risks, and they're having to do a lot of defending, one on one defending, which centre backs wouldn't normally have to. And I thought he started the season quite well. He was quite aggressive and confident. But as time's gone on over the last few weeks, that kind of controlled aggression within that setup has evolved into kind of manic, over-emotional performances. Mm. And it got to the point at Sunderland, I thought, on Wednesday, where it looked like he was really all over the place. And I was hoping at Cardiff on Saturday that he would be left out of the game just because it looked like he needed a breather. He just needed to stop for a moment. So I think it was more a reaction to that. And obviously with Sierra already playing in midfield, it's quite an easy move to drop him back one. I really hope this isn't a moment where the Porteous signing is beginning to be viewed as a failure or him as a dud or anything like that, because I think he's got a lot of potential. He plays regularly for Scotland. He's put in a few decent performances for us since he signed. I think this was just a day when he needed to sit it out. And actually, he came on for the last half an hour. And although, as Geordie says, we didn't have to do loads of defending, I felt like he did look a little bit more settled. He won the ball back well, confidently, and got us on the attack a couple of times. So, you know, that was only half an hour, and I might be reading too much into it, but it did seem like he maybe benefited from not being thrown in from the start again and from having that little break, sitting on the sidelines, watching on. So I'm sure he'll be back in the team soon, but definitely for me needed resting, sitting out for a game or two.
Geordie, what about you? Did you think before he sans Porteous as a back four, it was more in control? Because there's, I suppose, a little bit where, I don't know, it's because he's been playing that, you know, such critical position, and when Watford have been at their best, everything's been going through Sierra Alta, you know, one of our most important players. Were you happy with what you saw with him being at the back and the other, you know, the three around him?
The dropping of Porteous, I guess what's interesting is really the only three people you'd ever bet any money as being on the first 11 were a backman, Hoot and Porteous, because everyone else has changed throughout the season. So now it's really only backman and Hoot who seem to be featuring all the time. I think Adam's right. You know, Porteous has, I mean, there's a reason why certain players play for Watford in the nicest possible way and aren't playing in the Premier League. And it could be a bit of a finishing school to iron out errors that would get punished very, very quickly if they weren't playing in a higher level. You know, we like the blood and thunder of Porteous, but he does commit himself sometimes, leaves us open, and it is about finding that balance as a team. And I think, you know, Adam was right at the start of the season. We seem to be good, and we just needed to work out what we're going to do in the final third to be more incisive. And we seem to have regressed, and I don't think we're any closer to knowing our strongest first 11, which I think is starting to be a bit of a concern. So,
massive concern. Yeah. I did a video as I left the pub watching the Sunderland game. I couldn't even tell you where our best 11 was. Absolutely cannot tell you. And I don't, you know, we wouldn't have been any clearer after one more game. But yeah, it's that is concerning, because, you know, in the Championship, if you can find a good 11, or not a great 11, just 11 that can sort of tick along together, that can be a good solid base to build from. But Adam, you know, there was a lot of stuff, you know, we know there's, yeah, the bigger change, I suppose, in terms of the midfield three. Dele Bashiru stayed, of course, in the starting 11. Kiembe and Livermore in for what you would probably sort of say was a replacement for Porteous, but also Livermore on for Loser, who hasn't really been doing what we dream, and as I said the other day, starts to fall in love with him for. He's a bit off, but how did that midfield play out for you? Was it a tactic to make Watford a bit harder to break down?
The three games beforehand, we basically had opposition trample all over us. If you think back to Leeds and Sunderland and Middlesbrough at home as well, finding huge gaps in that midfield, finding it way too easy to create chances and score goals. And I think what Livermore and Kiembe gave us was a real base in that midfield to work from. I think it was probably a bit of a departure from the playing style that we eventually want to get to, or Ishmael wants us to get to. But it did provide us with a lot stronger base. And we looked more robust in midfield, which I think, as Geordie said, was helped by the fact that Cardiff didn't do anywhere near as much as attacking as the other teams that we've been playing. I also think, given the way we've gone under and kind of lost our way in games over the last few weeks, having Livermore in there as an experienced player who's Ishmael's lieutenant on the pitch, keeps reinforcing those messages, keeps players going. And you could see that happening on the pitch on Saturday. That was important. And he's also, because he is an experienced player and he's got those broad shoulders, and you'd imagine that he's someone who can shrug off a mistake or shrug off criticism quite easily. He was the one who is actually a banker to keep doing the things that Ishmael wants us to do on the pitch. Whereas we saw in previous weeks, midfielders would, as I say, go under and completely lose their way and lose any semblance of what the plan was. Livermore did keep the ball moving. He won the ball back loads of times and would quickly shift it on. And he made sure that there was a tempo in the team. So as much as we might say, and you're right about the first 11, and I don't think this has gone any way to helping us work out what the first 11 is. In fact, it's probably confused things even further. Considering the context of where we were on Saturday after those three defeats, we needed to change the dynamic and we needed a couple of players in there who were going to be solid bets, who were going to do the job for us on the day just to try and hold the momentum, which I thought is what Livermore did. He gave us that really nice, strong base. And I was impressed by the way he played. I mean, you know, I think nobody was wowed by the signing when he came in the summer, and that, you know, his first two or three appearances didn't really change that perception much, but this is the best he's played for us. And he proved what use he has as a character as well as a player, I think, because he didn't let himself, I keep using the phrase, go under, but, you know, he stayed solid and the performance was solid throughout the 90 minutes.
Jordy, though, about the two of them, do you think it added... Well, do you think Valerian was trying to make them us a bit harder to beat? And did it sort of add to a defensive side but take away from an attacking or even a pressing side of Watford's team?
Yeah, to a certain, I think he probably was. If we hark back to Middlesbrough, there was, well, I think it was Deli Bashiru who got turned, and then there was probably like 30 yards of space for the Middlesbrough midfield just to run into for their first goal. Then the second goal was just like a punt up front and two touches, and suddenly they were scoring. So I think there probably was more of a conscious effort just to shore up the kind of central defensive midfield area to make sure that nobody could run through on us. Although Cardiff did have one opportunity to do it. You know, it works, but yes, it does detract from the dynamism because Livermore and Kayembe probably aren't the most mobile players. And I think this is this interesting situation we have where we've got a squad of kind of two players per position, but no real superstars, is that there's no one who's, like I said, who's guaranteed to play. And therefore you almost have to try every permutation to see which one works. You know, is it Livermore and Kayembe with Deli Bashiru, or is it those two with Luza, or is it those two with Kone? Which is the one that's going to work? And then is it going to work every week? We seem to be finding our way and hemorrhaging points unnecessarily in some cases. And I think the kind of the shadow in the distance, if you like, is that we've had a couple of relegations in recent years. And we know that the second one, you go down because you're just simply not good enough. But the first one was like a relegation that crept up on us a little bit, where you think, oh, well, we just need a click and we'll be okay. And we'll pick up two or three wins and we'll survive. And we never did, which is in a way part of the start of our problem. And there is that slight kind of tremor that now we're in October. And we, like I said, we don't know our best 11. We're making basic mistakes and arguably less cohesive than we were at the start of the season. And we need to turn it around. And until we stop making mistakes and start getting more clinical, it's going to be difficult to start winning games unless we start playing against teams who are in a crisis too. But, you know, we're very good at getting teams out of crisis, aren't we? Like Middlesbrough hadn't won for a long time and were starting to get back on their feet, and Leeds hadn't won at home and things like that. So it's just that sense that we need to get it right soon, because otherwise we're going to then be in too much trouble probably to be able to get out. And it's just easier, the easier way to not get relegated is just to, like we did in the first couple of years in the Premier League, is to have a good first half of the season and pretty much make it impossible to get relegated and then get on with it. So I don't know, you know, to Adam's point, if Saturday was an example of Ishmael thinking, how do I kind of bank points by not being as offensive perhaps as I have been, because my defence needs it, because we can't keep conceding two goals, three goals a game. And he's just trying to get points on the board.
So Adam, with Luza, do you think we were sort of hinting towards the fact that he's going to be, you know, he's not been the loser that we wanted. Do you think, though, now you looked at something like Kembe and Livermore playing together, that is it hard to think where he's going to fit in? Because, you know, I always saw him as, a dynamic player, and that sort of lacks. He hasn't been as dynamic as he wanted. We want him to be. But in terms of us being a harder team to beat, do you think he doesn't quite fit in as well as you'd want to?
I mean, I suppose in theory, if we were to continue with Livermore and Kayembe losing to fit in there as the third midfielder, that's where he came on Saturday. You're definitely right. It's a strange one. I remember back the game when he came on after his injury at Stoke last season, after his first injury, and he came on and he was buzzing around full of energy, like Duracell Bunny, improving everybody's performance level. You know, it was a really, really impressive, eye-catching cameo. And then you watch him come on Saturday and that intensity and that busyness in his play just isn't there. And it's difficult to say why that is, whether he's feeling frustrated at the standard of the team he's in, whether he's feeling frustrated that he's even at Watford anymore, whether the reasons go deeper than that, whether it's a mentality issue, whether he's struggling mentally having had another serious injury last season. I really don't know, but it's a shame that someone who should be our best player and elevating every player around him just isn't doing that at the moment. And I thought even when he came on Saturday, he looked frustrated and like he couldn't get involved. He was being crowded out of the ball whenever he got on it. You're just looking for him to up it 5% and play at that speed, which when he does, it's very hard to live with him. And teams in this, it's been shown over the last year that teams in this division struggle to live with him when he finds that tempo in his game. I mean, there's always going to be a place for him in our team when he's at his best. But it's probably a reaction to the fact that he was actually midfield was too easy to play against and too weak in previous games. I think that was what prompted him dropping out, because we needed that stability and that guarantee of a performance level and an intensity which he isn't bringing us. So I don't know what happens next. Maybe the break is a good thing for him because he's definitely in our best 11 when he's at his best. But there's no doubt on Saturday we look more solid without him in the side.
Jordy, Danny Bashir, let's finish off the midfield. Just anything more, I don't know, controlled or mature from him this time? You know, definitely compared to Sunderland. I mean, a lot of them didn't have very mature performances against Sunderland. We all saw that. But what did you think about him and how he's fitting in, or how he fitted with a Livermore and Kayembe?
He was okay. Again, it's difficult to piece together how much of it is down to the questions the opposition's asking and compared to how well the players are playing with each other. He wasn't our worst player, I wouldn't say necessarily, but I didn't, for me, it comes down to that lack of cohesion. You know, we're not sure what to do. There's no fluidity. And, you know, to Adam's point, someone like Loser is someone whose body shape, when he receives a ball, he knows what he's going to do with it. He's unique in that sense in our team. And nobody can do that.
But I don't think to replace him, but did you see anything in terms of Dele Bashiru? Did you see a more attack thinking midfielder being a bit more, you know, taking maybe an opportunity that he saw in front of him because Loser wasn't in that team?
Or maybe more because that the other two midfielders aren't going to do that in that trio that played on at the weekend. But again, there's levels, I think, and I don't think he's probably at the level of a Loser. You know, they're both playing at their best.
That's the bizarre thing to say. He's not the level of a Loser at all. Yes. No, not at all.
Yeah, but I think we talk about the attackers, but I think the attackers can be left a little bit adrift in our formation and the way we play. And that, I guess what we normally call a number 10, maybe, because we play with two wide players, someone in the middle, someone who is dictating it and controlling the play. And we've got a player we know who can do that in Loser. I don't think anyone else can do that in our team, which is a concern. So I don't think it's a criticism of Dele Bashiru. I think he played as well as he can play. He didn't have a stinker. But, you know, we've talked about it. There's players who are playing for us in the first team this year who weren't considered good enough in previous years and were either loaned out or weren't first choices. So I think it's difficult to judge Dele Bashiru because you're judging him against, you know, a recent midfield that, you know, not that long ago, Kapu in it and so forth. So we've got to kind of judge him, I think, on where we are as a club. And he was okay, but I don't think he's necessarily the solution for what we need.
No, I don't think you're right. I think that the biggest point you said there, Jordy, is that he's a man who was dropped not that long ago and wasn't even part of the squad, let alone the starting 11s. Adam, you know, moving forward to that attack And we did see Martin start. We know that in the week he had some bad news from a bereavement at home in Brazil, and we assume he's off out there now to mourn whoever it was that he lost. We had Asprilla start. DCW on our group is adamant that he needs to start. Asprilla needs to start. We need to see more of him. We need to get more out of him. He needs to start. And it started, of course, to get ahead of Tom Ince. But Bio also started. I think let's start with him a little bit, shall we? Because, again, there were moments on Saturday as things were panning out, and he missed what some people are sort of seeing as a sitter. It was an absolute sitter, everyone was sort of saying. And it was always, of course, on social medias. People are sharing a still image. It was a still image that people are sharing saying, no, look, he completely missed it. He missed an open chance. And I would say it was a chance. I don't think it felt quite the same compared to his actual goal, that first one he missed in the first half, where he didn't see quite in the right position, on the right foot, with the goalkeeper also in a better position than compared to the goal. It's easy, I think, sometimes to criticise with a still image of people. But he did make both those opportunities. He was the one pressing. He was the hounder, and he got two opportunities, and he did take one of them.
He worked really hard, doesn't he? I don't think anybody could accuse him of anything but that. And you're right. It was noticeable, actually, that all three of our best chances on Saturday, if you count Bio's miss and his goal, and then the Tom Ince miss towards the end, were from, whether you call it us forcing mistakes or Cardiff making mistakes, but they were from the way our front players were trying to put pressure on Cardiff players under the ball rather than from our own creativity. I agree. I don't really like it when people share still shots because it doesn't do justice to what the chance really looks like. I remember one with Ighalo years ago at Man United, and there was a screenshot doing the rounds, and then it didn't look anything like that when you watched the replay. So it never does the striker. It's never that fair on the striker. I do think, I mean, let's be honest, a really good striker is probably just sticking that away. There was one split second where it's on his left foot and you think, that's the moment to roll it in. And I think we have to be honest about our striking options as a whole at the moment. You know, in my time going to Watford over the last 20 or so years, we've been very lucky to have some pretty good strikers at Championship level, most of whom have gone on to play in the Premier League. And at the moment, we are not living through one of the great eras of Watford striking options. I mean, the two guys who are playing most of the minutes, there are clear flaws to their game. Rajovic came on and struggled again, I thought. And Bio, you know, we watch him week after week. We now know what he does well, but there's plenty that he's not doing so well as well. He does at least get himself in these positions to score, and he does work very hard from the front, which is a good thing. It enables us to try and get control of the game when he's pressing the opposition defenders from the front. But unfortunately, that lack of quality up front at the moment is kind of undermining any of the decent attacking work that we're doing, because you have no confidence in chances actually hitting the back of the net. And too often when it gets worked into the front players, the moves are breaking down because the wrong decision is made, or there's a clunky touch, or it's a bit too slow. As Geordie just said, I think that's just where we are as a club at the moment. We don't have quality all over the pitch like we have done over the last few years. And yeah, I think certainly the centre forward position at the moment is one where we're hoping rather than believing that chances and moves are going to, or chances are going to be put away and moves are going to flow through the centre forwards, because it doesn't happen often enough.
And they're going to a couple of weeks off and they'll be back and be perfect, I'm sure. Not really. But Geordie, the boys either side of Bio, we had Martins, who came back, as we've sort of said, and Asprilla. They are sort of the excitement in the side, but they still have their limitations. Do you put that down to them, their age and all the rest of it? Or do you feel it actually is just the fact that they aren't able to shine through and show off their skills to play it through for someone to whack it in the back of the net?
I think it's interesting that we play with them on the wrong side. You know, previously, like, wingers always be on, you know, the right wing will be right footed, the left wing will be left footed, and they'd stick with and give the team width. Whereas they both want to cut in on their stronger foot, which slows the move down, which then either leads to them having to pass the ball into midfield or take, you know, Martin, someone, eventually the team's going to work out his move of cutting in and shooting into the far top corner, and it'll stop him doing it. But the ball doesn't get crossed in. So you can put a ball in and the centre forward scores it and you get an assist and it looks like you did really well. But if you don't have that confidence on your, you know, of using your wrong foot, or you just don't have the confidence that your striker is going to do it, you end up not not doing it, which then can often lead to the mood breaking down because we're so kind of ploddish and getting the ball forward. Again, it's a difficult one. I think they're both a stage of their development where they belong at Watford. We've seen other players continue their development and go on and, you know, are now playing in, you know, spoken about in Europe and so forth at higher level. It's down to them to kind of take the opportunity they've got of being at Watford now as we are. And in the way we saw with João Pedro, kind of go from being a boy to a man and taking on that responsibility to the extent that I think João Pedro probably did it too much last year and tried to do it himself. There's a chance for Martins and Asprilla to stake a place in the team, but they need to step up and show that they can be better and they can stand out in a team. It's very easy as a winger to be isolated, the ball's not getting to you, but they are a fundamental part of how we play. And really, I think it's the centre forward that's compromised by our formation and our kind of lack of anyone around him. Because we talk about Bayo Rivets not holding the ball up, but we've got three wide players and then a midfield that isn't necessarily getting the support of them, while the centre forward has two defenders on him. And he was saying, why aren't you holding it up? I think we need to get around the centre forward, and I think the two wide players need to go back to being wingers, if you like, get the ball in the danger and not always look for the safe option, which is probably what they've been asked to do a lot of the time, to be fair. So it's not necessarily on them. But I do feel that sometimes we go down the wing and moves just die out because we're looking for the perfect opportunity where we then see other teams get the ball forward and our defenders create chaos for themselves. And in the Championship, I think that happens a lot. And so, you know, to Adam's point, we created opportunities by pressing Cardiff or goal-scoring opportunities by pressing Cardiff. It doesn't have to be a perfect move. And sometimes I think just getting the ball in the danger area and seeing what happens could probably be more fruitful for us than overplaying it or trying to cut in and shoot every time themselves, because I think teams get wise to it.
So, Adam, as you left Cardiff on Saturday, trying to wait your way through all the rugby fans, what did you think? Were you, you know, were you happy? Were you content? Were you thinking, you know, after seeing what could have seen as a disaster away at Sunderland, that they were able to bring something together and just a little bit longer and a few days sort of together to focus on just the overall setup of the team in the international break and not have to worry just about the next game and the next game and the next game, that we could make some steps forward and be in a much more back to where we sort of started the season?
I think every Watford fan there was relatively content with the performance, considering what had happened at Sunderland and then going a goal down quite early here. I think there was probably an expectation that we were going to surrender again and end up losing 2 or 3 nil. So I think the response in the game was impressive and not necessarily expected. I think a big part of that was down to what we've talked about, particularly Livermore in midfield, who allowed us to keep our shape and keep our heads and keep playing. And probably the overriding feeling was that if either of the two teams was going to win, it was going to be us. We didn't really, as much as we had more of the territory and virtually all of the game was played in our attacking half, we didn't create those golden chances, which kind of made me feel like we really ought to have won it. Inces was the only one, but it was really capitalising on a mistake. And he got, I think, put under a little bit of pressure by the defender as he spooned it over the bar. It was one of those frustrating ones where you leave thinking, well, we've probably had the better of the game, but we haven't had that. We haven't created that killer chance that should have been the moment where we won it. And that's clearly been a problem in too many of the games this season, where we walk away feeling like we've done quite well. And lots of the approach play was decent, but we haven't been able to create the big opportunities. But as I say, I think the overall feeling was actually relief and contentment that at a time when the team is so mentally fragile and the club seems so fragile to the point that whenever we go behind in any game, it feels like a major issue, we've actually managed to find a response. And it was a resilient performance, I thought, at a time when I wasn't sure we were going to get one, if I'm honest.
We're the Orns, you're the Orns. Come on, you Orns!
Well, we do have an international break, but don't worry, there are some podcasts for you to listen to. You might have heard over the last couple of weeks where I had a week off because I was focusing on a special project. Well, you'll find out exactly what that is by the end of this week. Thursday, we've got a special from the Rookery End where I'm going to be chatting to Mr. Lionel Burney. You've heard the podcast many, many times. And him, myself and Colin Mace have been making an audiobook of the book that Lionel must have put out 14 years ago, I think it was, and maybe a little bit longer than that. Called Enjoy the Game, the story of Watford in the 1980s. So that is going to be out this weekend, and you can hear exclusively, you know, I hate that word, you can hear exclusively, but you can also hear my interview with Lionel about the book this Thursday. So you want to get the first taste of Enjoy the Game, the audio series, then do listen to from the Ukraine special this Thursday. And then basically from Friday, you'll get to hear the whole book, which will take you many, many hours, but it is a fantastic, fantastic listen. But more of that to come. One thing we're not quite sure if they're going to be around or what's going to be happening and how they're going to be spending their international break is Ben Manga. Reports coming out yesterday, sort of on Twitter from just one account really, that apparently he has had conversations with Gino and he is he's on his way out, the Watford technical director. And we've just seen the last hour, in fact, Adam Leventhal at The Athletic. He said it's increasingly likely that Watford's technical director Ben Manga and his recruitment team will be leaving the Championship club following discussions on Monday. Now, Geordie, when we see this international break, we quite quickly think, oh, is a manager leaving? And it isn't this time by the looks of it, but someone is leaving. How did you sort of feel when you see this thing, you know, you see another, what we consider to be, or you assume to be, a key member of the senior footballing side of the club, another one leaving?
Well, it's not great. This recruiting of people, whether it's managers or heads of recruitment or whatever, and then them leaving quickly just smacks of a failure to do due diligence or failure to support them, really. I think, there comes a point where there's so many examples, whether it's, you know, normally it's managers, like you say, but there ends up becoming a common denominator, and it's the club, and it's the people who run the club. Now, Manga, I'm assuming, to move to a Championship club from where he was, to move country, he would have come with the anticipation, you know, certainly not that it would turn out the way it's seemingly going to turn out. He'd have a different mandate or there'd be a different level of support. It doesn't seem to be what's manifested. And you just wonder, like, what's going on? It's frustrating because we can, like, you know, I said, you know, I was talking before, like, an element of freefall, if you like, if you look at it in the last few seasons. There have been people who presided over that. And, you know, we're talking about the players and, you know, go through the players. Did they play well or did they not play well? And we're trying to couch it in the ability and what we can expect from them rather than comparing them to maybe what we've expected, you know, been used to and seen in recent years. And that is all kind of down to people who are still at the club. And so there's not like they're bringing people into a winning team and, you know, it's not like the Beatles recruiting someone, you know, and it's just not quite up to that level. It's, you know, we're not doing well enough. Really, you know, a lot of the signings that we've sold for profit were signed a while ago. And you wonder now, like, who's the next jewel that we're signing? And you wonder that if our business model is built on selling players for lots of money, who are we flipping? Who are we bringing in that's going to be good enough to flip? And I don't know how much Manga had to do with some of the aberrations last season who, you know, simply weren't good enough.
Well, the only one, again, I'm not quite sure, but what Adam does mention in his article, he does say that Aruj and Ferreira, as well as Kone, were all his signings, or the only ones he did, but their impact was reduced in the summer due to the limited budget that the club had for signings. So, you know, it could be a restructure that Gino decided to do, but it's because it's not really worth spending the money on these people when they're not able to sort of spend any money.
Yeah, I mean, why do you have a personal chef if your larder's empty? You know, you've got nothing to cook with. So if we haven't got any money to either scout these players or to recruit these players, then it does seem a bit frivolous to have Manga, but he's not someone we recruited in the Premier League and we can't afford. We brought him and his team in knowing really what the business situation was. So why did we bring him in if we weren't going to support him? It doesn't make sense. And there's a lot of things that aren't on the pitch that don't make sense of Watford in the way it's run and the people that are involved. And I think that's the source of frustration for a lot of fans. Again, and it's a topic that's been discussed at length over recent years as these weird things happen, either managers leaving or, yeah, and this time now, you know, it's more expense. You know, it's, you know, when we let managers go, there's probably a fee to pay. You know, Manga didn't come on his own. So he probably had a good contract to bring him over here. And similarly, his team will have to be, you know, compensated for losing their jobs in some way. And this is at a time where we don't really have a great deal of money to be spending. So it doesn't seem like it's very sensible. I know Mike got his point of view on the club looking to just basically get into shape to sell, and maybe it's a case of just reducing overheads in that sense with that eye on the future. But, or maybe Banger knows if the club are looking to do what Mike says, that they're not going to be spending any money. So whilst he's sitting around being a recruitment director for a club that's got no interest in recruiting anyone, other than the likes of Tom Ince, who you don't need Ben Manga to tell you about. it's disappointing, but maybe it's a bit of a bucket of water in the face for some of the fans who don't kind of realise this is where we're at. You know, you've got to look at why is he going? Maybe it's because the situation we're in isn't the situation we wanted to be in. Maybe we thought we would get into the playoffs, towards the end of last season, and maybe he'd be recruiting for the Premier League, and maybe it just hasn't happened. And now, he's now surplus to requirements because we can't afford to recruit anyone, or we're not attractive to bring in the kind of players we want to bring in.
Because at the event with Gino, he was fairly clear, I think, for me, where he sort of did talk about Manga being someone who had experience and knowledge of different markets to what, the current Pozzo network of players and coaches and scouts are part of. He was meant to open up new doors, I suppose. And if the recruitment hasn't gone quite right and he isn't opening up those doors, that might be a criticism of him. But Adam, how do you feel about hearing this sort of news?
Yeah, I think this is a complete mess, to be honest. As you guys just said, and in fact, I think Ben Manga said last season, he had a little bit of a say in January in terms of the recruitment, but actually he'd been recruited with 6 month bedding in period to be ready to go in the summer just gone. So the idea that we've suddenly not been promoted and realised we've not got no use for him or got no money for him to spend in the transfer window doesn't really add up to me, because you'd have thought that surely has at least been thought through. And as you just said about the event over the summer, that kind of sums it up, because you had Ben Manga sitting there and Gino's talking him up as a person with lots of experience who can help in the transfer window. But you've also got Cristiano Giaretta sat on the same panel, and there's no clear distinction, publicly at least, in terms of what their jobs are. And then you've got Gino there as well, who pulls the strings and ultimately has the final say over every single big decision for himself. And I've just read part one of the Slaven Bilic exclusive on the Watford Observer website, and he says exactly the same thing, where last January, Manga came in with his staff and the entire thing was just a mess because there were too many voices. There's no clarity at the club in terms of who has what, whose job is what. I'm not sure I've put that in the best way, but who's doing what? There's no definitional clarity in terms of roles at all. And it's just a load of voices in a room shouting at each other. And then Gino gets the final call anyway. I think the appointment of Manga was meant to be a moment for us where it's a glimmer of hope that Gino has maybe seen the error of his ways and appointed somebody with a lot of experience and a lot of expertise. And he came with glowing reviews from German football fans and from football fans all over the world, from countries where players have been signed, for Frankfurt in particular. And that maybe, our football operation was going to be handed over to this guy who understands how to recruit players, how to recruit head coaches, how to align a club around a style of play, and that maybe this was the start of a brand new plan to clean up our act and go again. And the fact that, it was evident quite a few months ago over the summer and beforehand that he probably wasn't getting that level of influence that we hoped he would. And the fact that it's all kind of come out in the wash like this and he's ended up leaving, presumably because the relationship between the three of them isn't working, is just the latest sign that there's actually no plan at the top of the club, that things are done on a whim, things are done randomly. And, it's depressing to feel so negative about it, but it's hard to see where we go from here, because Gino has consistently proven that there is no long-term plan and that he has no vision for where he's taking the club. We're just jerking from window to window to appointment. And it's difficult to say where this could end up, because at the moment, I don't really see much hope for any kind of long-term vision or aim for where we're going.
No, that was always the desire, I suppose, at that Gino event, that he would give us and share something with us about what his plan was. Also, he didn't, but I'm not surprised by that. And as I've said many times already, just hearing from the man, understanding how he talked about past decisions, you know that he is actually adamant in his own mind. And that helped me with a bit of acceptance, I suppose. Like, I know that he's going to be whatever he wants to be. So just let it happen in front of us and hope, or just, you know, something to change somewhere down the line. Either maybe he sells it or he ends up leaving. But, you know, who does what and what our responsibilities are, what did come up in that meeting also. And I know it was requested from the club, you know, could they give us an org chart, an organisation chart? And that hasn't come out. It was promised by Scott, I think, in the meeting. And that hasn't really helped us to sort of, you know, clarification is pretty much all the fans really want, to understand how things work so we could be supportive, I suppose. But also understanding about when things change. And, you know, the way that both you have both talked, there clearly isn't a very clear and confident way that Watford fans are talking about Gino and the choice that are going on.
I mean, it's been a bit morose, isn't it? Funny, we kind of stopped the rot with, or stopped the defeat with a draw, but we're still kind of, yeah, not overly happy. I think it's a reflection of where we are. You know, I've said it, you know, years ago. I think we kind of lost control of our destiny around the kind of silver period, and since then have been reacting, as Adam says, we're kind of jerking around, just trying to react to the latest thing, without any sense of strategy. And it is frustrating because we all know what we can achieve. You know, we did it before. And in a way, you know, you look back and there's a lot of throwing players at Zola. And then he didn't make it up. And then we had a season with Sinan. And then eventually, you know, Slav did get us up. And then we made a fist of it in the Premier League. But you just wonder now, you know, we don't seem to have that template anymore, that resource anymore. And you do wonder, what is the plan? Is there a plan anymore? Because there's no evidence that we're bringing in young players to kind of take a couple of seasons to grow them. There's no kind of, we can't see any real future superstars or any. You know, like that.
So, we did sort of talk about that a bit early on. We did talk about Espria and Martins being those possible young, sparky, you know, flippers. And I almost did see this year, as you see who they were surrounded by. They were surrounded by a little bit of seniority in Ince and Livermore. But as we've seen, that just hasn't clicked. It hasn't quite panned out as well as it had sort of started to show. But that would be the new model, to have those shiners, but to have good, solid, championshipy players to help support them and be part of their development. So I suppose we haven't quite... That I did think I was seeing a strategy when it comes to the playing side of things. Do you not agree, Geordie?
I think it's more a strategy of what can we do? You know, we can afford a few older players to come towards the end of their career who don't cost a lot in Ince and Livermore. And then, you know, we'll just kind of dress it around the size, you know, pick up Kone, who hasn't played a lot of football. You know, we'll do some scouting here and there and bring players in. But, we've done well with Ryan Andrews, but that doesn't seem to be like a huge conveyor. But I think the lad up front from Middlesbrough came from their youth team, and we're buying centre forwards who don't seem to be improving the team. And as Adam said, you know, we have been spoiled in the past with our centre forwards, but putting the ball in the back of net is important. And the interesting thing with the Cardiff game is it was the first time this season in the league that we've scored one goal. We either score zero or we get two or three or four even against QPR. We just don't have any consistency. If the season was backwards, you would almost say, okay, you know, we've just beaten QPR 4-0 and we look like we're cohesive and look like we're going forward, but we're kind of regressing. And my concern is, you know, maybe they'd do some work in the international break. But unless we can find a way, and particularly not find a way to make a player like Loser, who we know is probably the best player in the squad, if we can't make him shine, what's the problem? Is it something personal? Is it injury? Is it frustration with the players he's with? Or is it that when he looks up, there's no one to pass to, you know, and that no one's showing and no one's got that confidence. And when things just start going badly, players start to hide. And then you're kind of, you know, we're talking about these young players. We're relying on them a little bit too much. So it's
not quite balanced.
It's got the potential. I mean, we can look back at this podcast that, you know, in May, and say, oh, look at us, you know, we finished, you know, safely mid-table. It was okay in the end. Or we could look back and say, you know, yeah, we were talking about the warning signs of a very worrying season being pretty, pretty clear. So it's a difficult one. We need to get it right. I guess fourth bottom is as good as seventh in the Championship with regard to kind of just keeping you in the division for next year. Obviously, it's not as much fun for the fans to see that, but you know, maybe that's the cloth that we have to, you know, have to cut our cloth for the next couple of seasons. But it's a dangerous game to play, and I'm not seeing the thing that should give me confidence just yet that we're going to be okay.
Well, let's see if any confidence can grow from what we see on the pitch at Vicarage Road and the stadiums across the country when the international break is over and Watford are back in action. Thank you very much, Geordie.
Yeah, no worries.
And thank you, Adam.
Cheers, John. Let's keep our heads up.
That's the absolute way to say. Keep heads up, everybody. And remember, some really good podcast listening for you over the international break. More of that on Thursday on the From the Recruiting feed. Ah, come on, you odds!